Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and today I've got Morgan Lintz and Michael Daly with me. Hey, guys.
Hey.
They are on FaceTime, so blame all audio issues on Apple Incorporated. It's not our fault. We're not in the same room. It's these gentlemen live about an hour south of me. I'm in Sherman Oaks. You guys are Orange County in general, or you know, we want to give stalkers a city name?
No.
Excellent.
We're south Orange County, right?
Exactly. If you want to hunt them down, go to Sherman Oaks, drive an hour southward, and start looking around.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Morgan and Michael made this wonderful film called Turn or Risk. It won 4 awards at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2019, and we just had a great discussion about it. That is the podcast before this one. It's in the Discover Indie Film podcast. And I won't go into too much, but you should watch this wonderful film. It's available on Prime Video and YouTube and Vimeo, a whole bunch of platforms. So watch Turn or Risk. If you search for Turn or Risk, it'll be the only Turn or Risk you see on all the movie platforms, and enjoy that film. And in this podcast, we're going to have these two filmmakers answer the Discover Indie Film 4 questions, so we get to learn about their inspirations and maybe find out some films that we've all got to watch. And those 4 questions are: favorite films of all time, with a limit of 3, although you can totally break that limit because there are no rules. But favorite films, an underrated film, an overrated film, and a lesser-known film that people should seek out. And we didn't prearrange who would answer first, but I always think it's kind of fun to snake it. So, like, whoever goes first, then the other person will go second, and then that person will go first for the next question. So you take turns going first on each question. And feel free. Who wants to name their favorite films?
Oh, all right. I'll start. Okay, well, you're right. If I gave you all my favorite films, we'd be on for another hour. So I'm going to stick to the top ones that influenced me. I already stated in the previous podcast the power of North by Northwest when I saw it as a young child, and it immersed me in the director's vision. It introduced me, it was like a class, really, on directing, because I began to envision my own films as Hitchcock would have shot them. And then, of course, eventually that evolved into my own style. Other favorite films are Lawrence of Arabia. I saw Lawrence of Arabia, which is a 4-hour, extremely long film, at the age of 16. I think it was a re-release in theaters. My dad really wanted to see it again. I felt like I had been in the desert for that entire... When I came out, I felt like I had actually visited the Sahara. I just felt totally immersed. The only other time I ever felt that way, not one of my favorite films, but a film I really admire, was when I saw Barry Lyndon, the Stanley Kubrick film. I felt like I had gone back in time, because everything seemed so authentic in that film. So I'll throw that one out there too. Probably, you know, when people ask me, what are your favorite films? North by Northwest is always coupled with a Spielberg film. I mentioned this earlier, but I didn't tell you which one it was. Close Encounters of the Third Kind hit me right when I started college. I was so immersed in the story. I thought the story was very unique. I loved the cinematography. I think that cinematography by Vilmos Zsigmond had more of an effect on my style than any other film. And then I just started looking out for him. And then that led me to Caleb Deschanel and a whole bunch of other great cinematographers. But Close Encounters was such a perfect mix of color, dark, light, and story. And I realized watching Close Encounters, the same reason I liked It's a Wonderful Life. You've got this real life scenario that seems very realistic. In Close Encounters, it's the breakdown of that family unit because the dad seems to be crazy having seen these UFOs. And of course, It's a Wonderful Life. The dad is affected by, if you will, an angel. But then they introduced this fantastic element. And I kind of like the way the realism stays intact, even though you're introduced to this fantastic element that we know is not possible, but they make it seem possible. So I think that's a story that I'm drawn to.
Absolutely. And that actually, I would agree with you. I think Close Encounters is a wonderful film and definitely one of his best. In fact, I would, if someone said Close Encounters is underrated, I would probably say that's a fun pick for underrated, because most of the Spielberg love I hear on this podcast when filmmakers name, a lot of people lean on Jaws or Raiders, the first Raiders. Sure. And I think Close Encounters doesn't get what all it deserves.
I sat through Close Encounters every night for 36 nights in a row until I finally had enough. I would get done at college and I would see that movie before I did anything else. And some of my students think I'm insane. And I said, well, you know, we didn't have video back then. So the only way to see a movie was to go to the theater and see the movie. And it would last in a theater for a year sometimes if it was a big hit. Like Star Wars was in the theaters for over a year. I said, that's unheard of nowadays. So anyway, there are many others. I like Oliver, which is kind of a weird choice. As a musical, West Side Story. I'm looking forward to the new one. I hope he doesn't screw it up. But I'll leave it there. Turn it over to you.
Absolutely. And for those who don't know these voices by heart, Michael Daly went first. So now we're going to hear from Morgan Lintz.
Okay. My favorite movies. I don't know if these are my favorites, but these are some that I really enjoy. Chinatown, which has Jack Nicholson's best performance by far. In the mid fun range, which I'm going to cheat here and I'm going to do a two-way tie. Back to the Future and Indiana Jones, probably Raiders. Maybe Jurassic Park instead, because I did tell a story on the last podcast that was the first movie I ever saw when I was 2 years old in a theater. So that might take the cake on that one. And then for more, I guess, newer, Pan's Labyrinth by Guillermo del Toro would be one of my favorites, which is a foreign movie, but sorry, that's what I like. So I know that's
an incredible film. Those are all great films. I have to say, you just as when Michael named Close Encounters, I'm like, God, that's such an amazing film. I think Back to the Future doesn't get the credit for its remarkable filmmaking.
It's a great movie.
I guess you do identify primarily as a screenwriter, maybe?
Yes, screenwriting is what I do.
And I think I think Chinatown and Back to the Future, I think, are scripts that people study.
Yeah. I mean, Back to the Future, for me, it's the perfect adventure movie, and I don't think I can say that about many other adventure movies. It's got the right comedic beats, it's got the right dramatic beats, even though the drama can be a little cheesy at times. I like that. I think that's part of the charm of the movie. And Pan's Labyrinth, just through and through, one more time, because that movie is just visually one of the most beautiful movies I've ever seen. And Guillermo del Toro makes pretty great movies. Shape of Water wasn't as good. Sorry, I know it won the Oscar.
That was classic. That's how the Oscars work, right? You make a series of brilliant films, and then you make something a little less amazing, and then like, okay, we'll give you the Oscar now.
Yeah, Shape of Water felt like a rehash in a lot of ways of Pan's Labyrinth, done worse. So for me, I was like, I'll just watch Pan's Labyrinth again instead. And his newer movie coming out looks really good, so I'm going to name drop it Nightmare Alley, coming out in December, I think.
I just want to throw out there an interesting side story. When Morgan was in eighth grade, part of graduation was making a film. That was part of my contribution to teaching his class as well. And he wrote the screenplay for a little film we put together called Time and Time Again.
I think it was Time and Time Again.
Which he won an award for. And it was about time travel. It was about a kid who created a time machine so he could get a history report done on time. And he goes back into time with his classmates, and they go into these different time periods that they all have to report on to put this project together. I personally do not have a copy of that film. He does, and he doesn't know where it is. Someday we might post that up online. It turned out really well.
That was fun, actually. We just spliced ourselves into Titanic.
Yeah, we had a lot of green screen, early green screen.
Green screen, you could see the edges around everybody. Yeah. It's hilarious.
Well, it's not that bad.
It's pretty bad
sometimes.
I think a film made by middle schoolers has every right to not be technically perfect.
Oh, no, of course.
For sure, yeah. It's all about the spirit of it.
98% perfect.
98. Shoot for 98.
It.
All right, well, question two, and I guess Morgan will go first on this one, is a film that is underrated.
Okay. I'm going to go quick, but I've got two underrated, and I have one underseen, but I'll go quick. Underrated, Temple of Doom. Sorry, it's probably the best in the series. Everybody kind of disses that film, and I will admit that Kate Capshaw is very annoying in it, but as far as the campiness and the last hour of that movie, it's nearly a perfect action sequence that just keeps going and it just keeps pummeling you. And it's an amazing experience, in my opinion. And I think it leans into the campiness the most, which is kind of what those films are supposed to do. So I think that it might be the best in the series, which I know is unpopular. The other underrated, this one's actually really new, Under the Silver Lake, by Robert David Mitchell, who created, director of It Follows, which was a pretty big movie, horror movie. He created this movie in 2018 with Andrew Garfield as the star. And it's this deconstruction of neo-noir in this kind of fantastical Hollywood setting. And it is 2.5 hours long, but it is incredibly intriguing. And it's going to let people down probably in some ways because it doesn't come together in a very, you have to think about it for it to make sense to you. But it's a beautiful movie in my opinion. And it was totally swept under the rug because it got bad reviews at, Cannes or TIFF or something, because it's about kind of elitism in Hollywood and Hollywood people didn't like it. So it's
so the Silver Lake and Under the Silver Lake is the neighborhood Silver Lake up in LA,
and the way they film it, I really like this movie, but I won't go too long. The way they film it makes it feel fantastical. It doesn't feel like a real city almost by the end of it. And he gets swept up in this really weird cultish kind of mystery. And it's all about him kind of going through his day trying to solve it. But he's just this kind of slacker that's about to be kicked out of his apartment. It has kind of a, I don't know if you ever saw Inherent Vice or one of those kind of hangout movies, maybe even like Richard Linklater movies. It's got that vibe to it, but it's got this really cool kind of horror mystery background to it. So anyway, check that one out. It's good. And then for underseen, sorry, this is the last one. This is The Handmaiden by Park Chan-wook. Oh my gosh, this movie's amazing and nobody watched it for some reason. Once again, foreign movie, sorry, but it's something that couldn't be created in America. And for that reason alone, it's worth it. It's very sexually driven, which is a no-no in our society, but it's a beautiful film. And it also has an American counterpart that was made before it called Stoker. And that was also kind of underrated in my opinion. So that would be another one to watch. And if you do it as a double feature, you can really see where the American system like kind of suppressed his ideas and where The Handmaiden just let him go.
I remember Stoker.
You remember Stoker? It was kind
of swept under the rug, but I didn't see it, but I remember being intrigued.
Stoker is the American and The Handmaiden was made in Korea.
But there was no, Stoker, the American version was made from a Korean film, right?
I don't think it was a remake. I think it was an original concept.
I think it's a remake because I saw, okay, well, we should investigate that because I'm pretty sure it's a remake. Because I remember seeing the original and it was not in English.
Well, either way,
I don't know.
Like I said, I don't hold to fast rules, but I mean, you kind of just threw in your lesser known that people should seek out, but you're allowed to answer that next.
I've got another one.
Sorry. Excellent. Well, but now it's Michael's turn for an underrated film.
Yeah. You rode hog. Just kidding. Okay. So I'm only going to pick one to compensate. This is a film that did get attention and probably still does. But in my opinion, it is a virtually perfect film. And by that, I mean all the elements come together perfectly. And it was nominated for an Oscar. It didn't win. But I just watched it again recently in glorious 4K, Dolby Atmos, and just again swept away. This is the film Almost Famous. And I can't remember the filmmaker's name now. That's so
Cameron
weird.
Crow.
Cameron Crowe, thank you. I can't believe I forgot that because I talk about him all the time. I mean, it's partly biographical, which is a little bit where we're going with some of our future projects. But anyway, Almost Famous. I really recommend that film because I think it's virtually perfect, as I said. And it's fiercely entertaining and on so many different levels. Have you seen it yourself?
I saw it in theaters when it came out, and I haven't seen it since.
Yeah. So it's 21 years old now, believe it or not. That's pretty amazing. Anyway.
Yeah, I've heard, I guess I should confess, I didn't love it when I saw it in theaters when it came out. I think as an underground music snob, it didn't resonate, but I keep hearing about it as a film, and I think I really should go back to it and pay it a visit because Crow's a talented filmmaker.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, Jerry Maguire obviously was like the big commercial film he made. But yeah, I mean, he wrote Fast Times, right?
Yes.
So, you know, what are you going to do? So anyway, yes, Almost Famous. Excellent, underrated. Now we have fun with the overrated.
Oh, that's me. Okay, I'm going to get a lot of hate for this. I admire the innovation in this film.
I like how you build up to what you're going to say before you say the movie.
Hey, I'm a filmmaker. Okay, I saw it twice. Once in the theater when it first came out, of course, because it was an event film. I saw it again later. Are you trying to look at the list?
No.
I'm looking at my list and it looked like you were trying to look at it. It's funny. But anyway, the innovative qualities of this film were amazing. But I couldn't follow the frickin' story. And I got the gist of it. But it's another one of those films like, I mean, as much as I admire Christopher Nolan, who tries to tell a story in an original way, and I don't think it always works. Like, Inception was hard to follow. I get people say, no, I followed it perfectly. Was that on your third viewing? Because the first one was kind of, you know, you're still processing everything. You don't know what layer they're in. Well, that's part of the point. Yeah, I get that, but it would be, yeah. So anyway, in this case, The Matrix, for me, he's laughing. The Matrix, for me, just didn't work. And I talked to so many of my students and so many young actors, and they just love this film. And I just think it's totally blown out of proportion. I think the second one, I remember the scene on the freeway with the two twins. I remember the multiple Mr. Smiths that all came after him at the limo or something. I have these flashes of the innovative scenes, but I cannot tell you what happened in either film. I had trouble following it. And the third one, I just remember them being in the Matrix and the wiry, like, tentacles coming after. Anyway, I'm just saying, I don't think that worked for me, and I'm not sure the Wachowskis, I kind of liked Cloud Atlas, believe it or not, but I also had trouble following that. I'm not sure I agree with some of the choices made there. So I'm not a big fan of the Wachowski work, although I credit them for their innovative qualities. So I'll throw that out there.
Fair enough. And that's a good, you know, The Matrix is beloved. So
I know.
It sounded like you were kind of identifying the trilogy as a whole. Because you mentioned the second and third film. And of course, a lot of people would say, if only the second and third film didn't exist, then they kind of pull down the first one a little. But
yeah.
Amusingly, when I showed the kid The Matrix when I thought she was old enough, I think we watched it at the very beginning of COVID lockdown when it was like looking for entertainment. I'm like, okay, it's time you saw The Matrix trilogy. And I said, just know, first movie's going to kick ass and the second and third are going to be meh. And then she loved the first. And then the next night she watched second and third with me. And she was like, they weren't that bad. And I'm like, you're right. They're not as bad as I remember. Now, by the way, not as bad as I remember. Not a glowing review.
No, right. Yeah. The third one's pretty bad. The second one's all right.
I think I'd have to see the first one again, too.
The third one's really just
bad. I think if you watch the first one and then pretend that the second and third don't exist, that's the best way to go. Because I do think the first one is pretty wonderful. It's also a documentary that it's actually true that we are just living in an imaginary world. plug, you know, where we are all actually just batteries feeding a machine that we don't know exists. But that's beside the point. You don't get bonus points for the truth.
Well, I think you talked me into seeing it again. So
yeah.
The first one.
For just the first. All right, Morgan, you want to hit us with an overrated film?
Yeah, I'm going to preface this, but you're not going to make me rewatch either of these movies because they're bad. Yeah, I'm just going on a limb here. The first one is A Tree of Life.
Oh, yeah.
By Terrence Malick. That movie is a mess, and it's not good, and the screenwriting is bad.
But it looks beautiful,
but that just doesn't do it for me. I'm sorry. It's just, it has very, and I think people started to realize that Terrence Malick really doesn't have a purpose, because his next, like, three or four movies after that were all bombed by critics and audiences. So I don't know why that one is so, like, hyped up as this great movie. And then Foxcatcher. That movie bored me to tears. I thought it was going to be good. The trailer was awesome. It got me super hyped. Steve Carell in a dramatic role is how they kind of were selling the movie. And then you watch it and it's just like so boring. Like after 30 minutes, I was ready to just like walk out, take a nap.
Well, I can't talk you into rewatching either because I haven't watched either. I actually turned off a Malick long ago. I realize he's beloved. And I know a lot of people would be mad at me for not even giving him a chance. But, yeah, it doesn't... I'm not a huge fan.
His early work, like Days of Heaven and Badlands,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, there's some good stuff. But it's like, I don't know. I've heard Tree of Life. People have pumped it up to me. And I'm like, okay, one of these days I'm going to have to watch Tree of Life.
Yeah.
But...
you should watch it.
I'm blanking on one of the ones I didn't get through in his later career. Was it Thin Red Line?
Oh, that could be it.
That was earlier.
But I was like, you know, not everyone's for everybody. And that's fair. That's a fair thing to say. And Foxcatcher, I always wanted to see. Yeah. I thought Foxcatcher actually I have an Academy screener. So that means it's been sitting in the house for 4 years and I haven't watched it. So now it moves even deeper in the stack. Or it'll just never be seen. All right. Well, now it's the last question, a lesser known film to seek out. And I think it's Morgan's turn.
Days on Me. That's right. I'm going to butcher this director's name. So this is a...
Could you try again?
Oh, Siri wants something.
I have no idea what made that AI think it heard its name.
Okay, so the movie that I think is lesser known that people should see is called Coherence, and it's from 2013. It's an under $100,000 budget movie, and it is just something I strive to make at a under $100,000 budget. It's amazing. It's directed by James Ward Byerkit. That was terrible. I know I pronounced that wrong, but it's this great sci-fi thriller movie, all set pretty much within one house and one street, and it is filmed in 5 days or less, I think. Don't quote me on that, but it's like a very few amount of filming days. He just got his friends together, and they just filmed the entire movie, and it's got twists, and it's creative, and it's just amazing. You guys should watch Coherence if you haven't already.
You know what? I love Coherence, and the only reason I watch it is I think the third or fourth person to do this podcast named Coherence are the lesser known to seek out. So I watched it, and it is fantastic. I even think if we want to throw stones at I'm a big Nolan fan, but like when I look at a film like Interstellar with interdimensional time travel and shit, I'm like, you know what? Coherence nailed it with no budget, and they completely nailed the multiverse, right?
Yeah.
Like it's thoroughly entertaining and well thought out. And
the screenplay concept is so huge, even though the movie is small. It's crazy.
Yeah. And he has a fantastic cast.
Yeah. Everybody, even though I guess they're friends of the director, they feel really real. Every character.
Yeah. But they're known actors, aren't they? I think that director must have friends who wasn't Gil Bellows in it? But anyway, doesn't matter.
How do you know?
It's great. But Coherence is an indie that people should check out. For sure. And the only reason I saw it, because someone recommended it through this process.
I should have recommended something different.
No, I think it's great. I love Coherence deserves to.
Yeah, I got to check that out. You both have talked me into it. Yeah, a great commercial.
It's the trailer.
Trailer, yeah. Buzz, that's another one. Okay, I have two.
Cheater.
I added one. That. Okay, these are both older films. One's from the 70s. I don't recall the year. I actually talked about it on Facebook at one point. And it's set at Christmas time, but it's a thriller. And it took me totally by surprise. Somewhere I read a review. I came across a review. I think it was on Ebert.com, and I think it was one of his early reviews. And it just praised this film. It's called The Silent Partner. It's with Elliot Gould and Christopher Plummer. It's a Canadian film, but, you know, I don't want to give away anything because there's so many twists and turns in the film, it'll totally take you by surprise, and it's definitely low budget. It may have been paid through the Canadian Film Board or something, but it's a lower budget film. Actually, I have three films. I'll try to make it quick. So I recommend that. The twist ending is amazing. And Christopher Plummer's performance, that character he plays, is so twist. Have you seen it?
I haven't, but when you named Gould and Plummer, Christopher Plummer, I think he's just incredible. You know,
he plays a psycho in this film that's so twisted. You just have to see it to believe it.
Yeah, I mean, I know he's certainly considered one of the great actors of our time, but I think he's underrated still. I think he should be up there with the Newmans and the Streeps and everyone else, because he's always incredible.
Okay, I'm going to mention two other films that are, I know I added one. So sorry, it just popped into my mind.
No worries.
The first one is an old 1949 film that I introduced to Morgan actually a while back. It's a very short film. It's what they call a B film that would follow or precede a feature film. It's called The Window. And it's about a little boy who witnesses a murder, that old story. But it is so incredibly intense that it's worth watching. And it's only about 73 minutes. So it's a real easy watch. but it just spins the story very believably as this boy makes up a lot of things. He's kind of an only child, and he lives in a pretty low-income apartment tenement in New York City, one presumes. He sees the murder one hot night when he's sleeping on the fire escape. And then, of course, the whole story is about how no one believes him. And yet the killers, of course, come to realize he becomes a threat. So I suggest people check that out. And the other one is perfect for Halloween. And I know a lot of people know this film, but because I think in circles it's known as one of the great haunted house films. But the movie The Changeling with George C. Scott, it not only has a great mystery story, because the first half of the film is all about who is this ghost that's trying to communicate to Scott. And then the last half of the film is all about what the ghost wants and how is it all going to come through. So I recommend Silent Partner, The Window, The Changeling.
Excellent. All right, well, those, you both got your list done, and you both perform admirably, adding lots of extra films. I think
that was too long. Yeah.
No worries. No worries. It's supposed to be fun.
That's the part I was waiting.
Yeah, we love talking film, and there aren't that many people to talk film with. So you got us all excited.
There aren't, especially in this era where we've all been locked indoors, and mm-hmm. you know, it's been a one long movie binge or streaming binge, because Lord knows TV series now push movies out of the way so much.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's no. I certainly, you know, I haven't gone back to the theater yet, and
neither have I.
I certainly miss, you know, a group of friends going to a movie, you know, on a Sunday evening, and then walking into the lobby and discussing it for a half hour before you can figure out where to go get a bite. You know, it's just,
yeah.
And then, you know, so good times. We're filling it in with this.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, now it's my job to finish up. I'll mention again, everyone just listen to Michael Daly and Morgan Lintz answer the four questions, the Discovery Indie Film four questions. And they are the team behind the feature film Turner Risk, which won four awards at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2019 and is available all over the place. Just go to your streaming platforms, your Amazons, your Vudus, and search for Turner Risk and watch their great film. And now I will mention, and if you want to learn more about it, it's phenomenonfilmworks.com. If you don't know how to spell phenomenon, use a spell checker, but you know, hopefully you got a good enough education. Phenomenon's not too challenging. And if you want to learn about this podcast and more, by the way, if you're listening to this podcast, and you must be listening if you're hearing this, give this podcast 5 stars on whatever platform you're on. Give Turner Risk 5 stars on whatever platform you watch it on. And if you want to learn about this podcast and the TV series that it gave birth to, just go to discoverindiefilm.com. And on social media, it's at DIFWins. And I mentioned that Turner Risk won awards at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival. There's one every November. In fact, I think my first post-COVID theatrical experience will be the festival. I'm probably not going to go to the local Regal in between now and then, because I have too much work to do for the November Sherman Oaks Film Festival. But if people want to learn about that festival, and by the way, the lineup is going to blow everyone's mind, because we received almost 3 times the films we received your year. It's just grown. So it's become, we're actually screening for a full week, Monday through Sunday. So a lot of wonderful, amazing films from all around the world, and a lot from here in LA. So learn about that if you go to ShermanOaksFF.com, and on social media, it's at ShermanOaksFF. And there is a sister festival every June, so that I get to stay busy throughout the year, and that's Film Invasion Los Angeles, and you can learn about it at FilmInvasionLA.com, and it's at FilmInvasionLA on social media. And I have now said the obligated references to everything.
Okay.
All right.
But thank you, Morgan and Michael, for taking the time to do all this.
All right, thanks.
And thank you, everyone, for listening.
Yeah.